Clubhouse.
There is a lot of content in the world. Each year, we're inundated with thousands of hours of television, hundreds of new movies, and music every week. It can be overwhelming. How do you know what's worth your time and what you should just skip? Well, luckily, Pod Clubhouse is here to help.
Welcome to Love It or Leave It, the podcast. I'm Mike from Pod Clubhouse, and tonight we're talking about Miss America, the newest series from FX on Hulu, a new venture that FX and Hulu have going on together. Tonight we're talking about Miss America, and joining me we have the impresario of pop culture, Danny Dudek from ATX Gossip. We have So I'm Watching This Show's Kristen, and we have Pop Culture Review's Sheila. Hello, ladies. How are you doing? Thank you for joining me on this evening.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
That was perfectly timed. Hello. 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 What's going on, guys? How is coronavirus treating you? Sheila, have you kept your sanity? I feel like you are slowly slipping every day.
No, what you see on social media is not what I deal with in real life. I have a public and private persona. I'm homeschooling a six-year-old while trying to work a full-time job, but I do have some help, so it's been good. I've had my mom come out and help quarterback the schooling.
Thank God for grandparents.
Yes.
Always good in times of trouble like this. You know, yes. Like that's, you know, I saw a great meme about what's the number you call to get the substitute teacher to show up. I think there are a lot of parents going through that still, even like a month plus on now.
It's getting easier and getting harder at the same time because like he's only six, so there's no independence, but he's better able to do some of the work because he knows what's coming now. So it's not so bad. My alcohol consumption has not dropped, though. I'll be honest about that.
I think if you drink, I think everyone is just creeping up their 5 o'clock somewhere time. Once it hits a double digit, I think it's pretty safe to say in like, you know, 10 a.m., it's 5 o'clock somewhere. I think it's time
to go. If I start any earlier, I'm going to be putting booze in my cereal.
How about you, Kristen? How are things? You are actually an essential person in our world without going into specifics. So how are you handling coronavirus?
I'm fine. I do resist calling myself essential, though, because I do only work at a general contractor. So I don't think it's essential because we're not building roads or actual hospitals or anything. But I'm doing okay. I wish I weren't essential because I'm exhausted and I don't even have to deal with kids because we don't have any kids. And so it's just me and my husband and that's it. But it's still exhausting. And my sleeps have not been great lately.
A feather to your cap for not, especially in light of the episode of the show that we're talking about tonight, you're not saying I deal with the biggest kid of them all, my husband.
No, he's extremely self-sufficient.
Look at that, ladies. Potty trained, self-sufficient. I don't know. Kristen's got herself a winner. How about you, Danny? How are you handling the coronavirus lockdown?
Well, I work on websites and in social media. So in that respect, nothing has changed for me, except that a lot of my focus is usually on events. So 2 months without events has been a struggle.
I know it wasn't Texas-based, but what was your reaction to San Diego Comic-Con pulling the plug? That was the one I was really most rocked by. One, because I was going, but two, it's in July. It's in, you know, middle July. So I had really held hope that they might be able to do something about saving it.
I pretty much called it a couple weeks before that everything would be canceled until October. So I was not surprised. And I'm holding out hope that things happen in October.
New York Comic Con is in early October. So I also am holding out hope because that is in the backyard and hopefully the world will stop being on fire by then. But I don't know. It feels like that's even now, it almost feels like that's not enough time for the world to go back to a time where we could all gather in large spaces like that. It's crazy, right? I feel like it's been so long almost. The idea of 10,000 people cramming into like a convention center at Jacob Javits is terrifying to me.
It's technically still a hospital. So I don't know. October is not looking so good for Comic-Con.
The meme business, the memes and GIFs right now, I think are probably having the best time ever during coronavirus. And someone's made a great point that you would think conventions may be the safest place for people to gather because so many people are already in costumes and masks anyway. So the transmission rate would be reduced. But I don't know if that logic really flows through. That might just be.
Yeah, I don't buy that logic. That doesn't sound totally right to me. I've also heard a lot of stuff that this is really not going away until we find a vaccine. So we're going to be in some state of this well into next year.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm no doctor, but my feeling is that this is going to become just something that we live with. It's not like it's going to go away. It'll just become a thing that people go through, you know, like chickenpox or the measles. There will be an inoculation for it in children and some kind of vaccine if you've never gotten it, and then herd immunity. And that will how kind of will flame out. I think we've never really lived through anything like this. Even like the big, you know, pandemic-y things like SARS 20 years ago, that just kind of went away. It wasn't like I didn't get a SARS shot or something, you know, it just disappeared. This feels different than that.
And just as like a sign of the times, last weekend I was out with my son and we were out in the park and people were social distancing, but we had gone out later for pizza. And I told him, I was like, you just stay here. I'll run in and get the pizza. But he was saying to me, I want to wear a mask because he saw everybody wearing masks. And he really hasn't been out because we've really just kind of kept it to our like local neighborhood. So he's like, I want to wear a mask. I'm like, I don't have a mask for you. And he runs into his playroom and he comes back out. He's wearing a full-on Darth Vader mask. And I didn't know whether to laugh or cry because It was just like he got it. He got that people were acting in a different way and he wanted to kind of conform with it. But his complete and utter choice of mask just like redeemed my faith in humanity. So.
On that tip, and I can appreciate where he's coming from, the 1980s, I spent most of them in a Halloween costume made of a solid plastic piece mask that I don't think had really eye holes or a slit to breathe through. And I was Darth Vader basically every year. And I could not breathe in that mask. No, nothing was coming in through it and nothing was going out of it. It was just solid plastic. And I always felt like I was going to die. But for probably 8 years, I wore the same costume just in larger sizes every successive year. So I think he may be onto something. There are masks out there that may do the trick.
You'll have to resurrect that from your garage or something.
I don't think it would fit anymore. But, you know, as happy as coronavirus talk is, we're actually here to talk about a real hoot riot. Mrs. America, the new series on FX on Hulu, which is weird. It is actually an FX series, but it was picked up by FX. It was commissioned by them. But they have a new partnership with Hulu where they have this whole, like, sub-channel branding, FX on Hulu. And so this is airing there. It's, I think, the first show under that banner to air on FX, FX on Hulu. It was created by Davi Waller, who has a really impressive biography, especially her producing credits. You may not know the name, but you probably know their shows. Halt and Catch Fire, Mad Men, Eli Stone. Three great shows that everyone should watch, but Halt and Catch Fire especially. If you've never watched it, you absolutely should. The four seasons are available on Netflix. Probably the greatest show you've never heard of. So I'm immediately a Miss America fan because of Davi Waller. It's 9 episodes. It just dropped the first 3 on April 15th, again on Hulu or FX on Hulu. And for the plot, I'm going to kick this over to Kristen. Kristen, walk us through the general idea of what Mrs. America is about.
Mrs. America tells the story of the movement to ratify the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, and the unexpected backlash led by a conservative woman named Phyllis Schlafly, which is very difficult to say. Apparently, she's also known as the sweetheart of the silent majority, which is, I feel like, a really ominous AKA. Through the eyes of the women of the era, both Schlafly and second-wave feminists Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, Shirley Chisholm, Bella Abzug, and Jill Ruckelhaus, the series explores how one of the toughest battlegrounds in the culture wars of the 70s helped give rise to the moral majority and forever shifted the political landscape.
That's it in a nutshell. This is one of those shows where you start off based on true events. And this show goes a little bit further, though, because it takes the time to say it is generally historically accurate, but behind closed door conversations and intimate one-on-one conversations that weren't otherwise documented, but maybe reported or apocryphally talked about, may be liberally interpreted here. So I think you have to say it's a fictionalized version of a very real event, not too far in our past. I actually kind of wanted to start there because for me, it's a big part of these kinds of shows. All period dramas, I think, have to wrestle with this idea. But one that's only 50 years ago, I think it's particularly important to discuss how historically accurate does this show need to be? Does it owe it to the topic, especially something like the Equal Rights Amendment and equality for women? Does it owe some kind of special responsibility to be as historically accurate as possible? Or should it be allowed to be dramatic and give license and embellish and exaggerate for flair and dramatic purposes on TV? Danny, what's your take on shows as they have a duty to report historical accuracies?
Well, I'm a big fan of the historical accuracy and do find issue oftentimes with a lot of the added drama. I understand that in some cases you're going to have to take liberties with what was said behind closed doors and assume what may have happened. That being said, it is difficult to know exactly what happened in some instances, but yes, I feel that there is a responsibility to be as historically accurate as possible in the telling of a story like this. In fact, I even had a problem with Titanic not being historically accurate. So if I had a problem with that, I would definitely have a problem with a show like this taking too many liberties for the sake of dramatic purposes.
I think I'm inclined to agree with you, and I think it's important what you said, because I don't know, it's always a hard and fast rule, but a show like this, and I guess Titanic too, but more to our interest right now, a show like this, I think it's just a really serious topic, and I think I agree with you. I feel like there's this need, especially in this world where we live in, it's hard to tell what's real and what's not real. Just on our news websites and our news channels, people run the risk of getting their information from a show like this. And this is the kind of show that college kids end up basing their term papers on. So you don't want to give out bad information, you know, and it's, especially if you're going to have villains, you know, I think you kind of need to make sure you're accurate. Sheila, what's your take on historical accuracy in shows in general and a show like this with such a serious, important topic?
You know, I agree with Danny and Mike, you know, what you said, because people do get a lot of their information from entertainment. So it's like infotainment. So I think in telling a true story, it is important to stick to the facts, and where you need to dramatize certain things, maybe to connect certain plot lines, or, you know, to hypothesize about how they got from point A to point B, if it was a closed door conversation, or the blending of some characters into one character, which is something that this show does. I think it's okay to a certain extent to dramatize some of those elements, but the big plot points, the big facts have to be right. Because like you said, this is pretty recent history. So there are people alive today who are part of that movement, were part of that movement. And I feel like it's important, just from a historical accuracy record, just to make sure that you get those stories right. Because ultimately, it would reflect badly on the credibility of a show and of the production to be so far off the mark.
I agree with you. And I think a story like this already has so much built-in inherent drama. I mean, when you're talking about like the proto-moral majority versus the titans of second wave feminism, there are enough fireworks and just naturally really realistic occurring things to report. I don't need that you need to really sex it up or make it really fluffy just to sell more ad time. I think it's already doing that work just by picking this topic. How about you, Kristen? What's your feeling generally on historical shows and then a show like this?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's best to be as historically accurate as possible, especially like Sheila and Danny said, these are real people. Gloria Steinem is still alive. You need to pay respect to that. At the same time, I think, like we've already talked about, the conversations that are happening behind closed doors, we're obviously inferring a lot of that stuff, even while some of these women have like biographies and stuff written on them. So it's definitely possible that some of this stuff is just like based on lots of research. And I am unfortunately not versed enough in this time period, especially in feminist history, to speak to what is true and what is not. But I do think that they are treating the historical moments with respect. Whether or not they're verbatim is a different story, but I think they're treating it with respect in a way that it's not coming off like a vaudeville act or something. It feels very real, and I feel like the only moments that we get stuff that's dramatic and maybe didn't actually happen even remotely that way is with the actual personal stuff that's going on. So in that sense, I think this show is towing an appropriate line, and it's not something like Outlander or like Danny said, like Titanic, which the major thing happened, but like the intimate things that we're watching Jack and Rose go through probably weren't real.
I like that you said probably weren't real.
Probably. You never know. There could have been star-crossed lovers on the Titanic.
She's holding out hope for that door scene.
I think there's a good chance he never really drew French girls. You know, I don't know that he had the proper skill set.
Bite your tongue, Mike. He definitely drew French girls.
I think he probably spent more time drawing his little Italian friend at the beginning of the movie. But I actually liked Titanic. I was one of those people who saw it in the theater like 3 times, but I also very clearly remember a theater full of crying girls. I was a boy at the time. At the time, I've grown into a man.
You are no longer?
I am a man, manly man. And I remember loudly heckling when Jack floats off to his death screaming, "No, Leo!" Like, I remember very loudly mocking everyone, crying hysterical tears. Because it was the third time I'd seen it and I had already shed my tears. So I was a stony, close-hearted man by that part. So I was able to mock it.
You do realize we're covering Mrs. America, right? So you're talking about being a stony man, not the time and place.
See, it was inevitable. It was inevitable I was going to say something.
I will say something about these historically based series and films, though, that I appreciate is bringing an issue to light that a lot of people may not be educated on, who hopefully go on mm-hmm. and educate themselves, which is yes. what I do anytime I see any movie or TV show based on history. It pushes me to go learn more about that topic and see which parts were exaggerated, which parts were true. I like the aspect of it overall, and I just like to hope that people go on and educate themselves. Do they?
Yes.
Maybe 50%.
You know, but
I do.
But don't you feel like you get like something more out of it? I don't know about you guys, but like I think I've read 2 or 3 articles at least after every episode I've watched, because this is not a well-known part. For something that's very recent, I mean, relatively recent in our history, I don't know a lot of people that know the ins and outs of it. I certainly didn't, and I like history. Kristen, have you looked or been inspired to go look for or read anything more about this afterwards, or you're just enjoying the show on the paper?
So I have not, aside from the fact that I did go look up Phyllis Schlafly today because I was curious about her children. No, I have not been doing a lot of research, mostly because this topic really hurts my feelings because it's still happening and I hate it.
Well, I mean, that's a certainly fair thing. And you're not the first person I've heard say that this is almost too raw a topic. You know, it's one that's not really known widely. But also a lot of, rightly so, women feel like there hasn't been a whole lot of progress since the late 60s and early 70s, especially in this area.
And I think the thing that hurts my feelings the most is Phyllis and her band of supporters, because it's the type of thing that really freaks me out, because they believe with every part of themselves that they're correct. And we all know that they are not. And they're pulling so many of these quote unquote facts about the ERA totally out of their ass. Like, women are going to get drafted. And it's like, they're not, though. Like, none of this stuff that you're saying is real. You're just making these dog whistle things to freak out other women who aren't smart enough to do the research or like motivated enough to do the research. And it's just like, it's so frustrating to like watch a female misogynist be so captivating to such a large group of people. It's really upsetting.
I definitely want to talk about that, because whether you agree with the positions or not, no matter whose side you are on, I think the cast is a stacked cast of talent, and Cate Blanchett as Phyllis Schlafly is doing some real heavy lifting in the acting department here. Again, separate from whether you agree with it or not.
No, 100%.
She's selling the hell out of it.
It's a revelation. Like, everybody's a revelation, but she's doing a ton with this right now.
She is captivating as this role.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into that then, because the cast is really, I think, for me, a big selling point on the show. Listen to some of the names. You'll notice there's only one male here of note, but which I guess is not surprising. But
I'm sorry, Mike. Adam Brody is in this show at a certain point, just so
and
you know.
And so is James Marsden.
There you go.
Yeah. Yes. All fair. He was on the list. I guess there were 2 men.
Okay.
I was thinking more of John Slattery. But okay, so we got the guys out of the way. Jesus, ladies. Come on. This is a show about, you know, women, you know, rising up and doing for themselves.
Look, that doesn't mean I can't like Adam Brody with 70s glasses and bad hair. I'm into it.
Thirsty for the 70s. All right, so we have Cate Blanchett playing Phyllis Schlafly, the mother of the silent moral majority. We have Rose Byrne playing Gloria Steinem. We have Uzo Aduba, who's playing Shirley Chisholm, who, guys, I know her from Orange is the New Black.
She's Crazy Eyes.
She's Crazy Eyes, but she's killing it here as Shirley Chisholm.
I love her in this
role. Holy shit. Let's keep going. We have Elizabeth Banks. We have Margot Martindale, who, if you don't know her, go watch Americans on FX. She's fucking fantastic. We have John Slattery. We have Tracy Ullman. When was the last time anyone saw Tracy Ullman? And again, doing this dramatic role as Betty Friedan, wow, I didn't know. I never really appreciated her for a dramatic actress, but wow. You have Jason Torsten. You have Sarah Paulson. You've got Gene Triplehorn. Oh, wait, we're like 15 people deep, and I think all of them probably have some kind of major Emmy or Oscar in their name or some kind of significant nomination. Danny, what's your take on the cast here? Is a selling point for you or distracting or full of duds or just breakouts?
Oh, no, totally a selling point for sure. It is a stacked cast, like you said. And all of these people, even if you don't necessarily know their name, you will know their face. Even when you were talking about Margot Martindale, sure, not a household name, but you see her face and you're like, oh, I've seen her before. And you might not even be able to place what you've seen her in before. But they all have really, really awesome credits to their name. And I've been surprised by some of their performances. Not necessarily Uzo. I knew she was great. Knew Kate Blanchett was great. I've been pleasantly surprised by Rose Byrne. I don't know that I really knew a lot about her, like what she has in the bank. I don't know, that was a really bad reference, but you know. Somebody say something smarter.
I want to tell you what she has in the bank because I've been a fan of Rose Byrne for a really long time. And initially it was because she was in a movie with Josh Hartnett when I was in high school. But then it was because she's on this show with Glenn Close and Ted Danson called Damages that was out in like the early 2000s. It is fabulous. It's really, really good. And she's excellent in it.
Another effects show, I believe.
I believe it was. Yeah, it was an early effects show.
It was an early effects show, yep.
And while we're on the topic of Margot Martindale, I have heard very good things about The Americans. I have not watched it yet. But what I always tell people to watch from her is she is in the Alexander Payne segment of Paris Je T'aime. And it's called 14th Arrondissement, I think. It floors me every time. I cry every time. It's 100% the best thing I've ever seen her in.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, she's a bona fide star. Again, kind of like Halt and Catch Fire up above. You know, maybe an actress you've never heard of before. Just killing it. Just really doing a great job. Danny, well, I agree with you. I really associate Rose Byrne with like Peter Rabbit and Neighbors. So watching her kind of kill this take on Gloria Steinem has been kind of a revelation for me.
Well, to me, totally anybody that can hold their own against Kate Blanchett and Sarah Paulson, kudos to them. And I do think everyone is holding their own in the three episodes I've seen so far.
Danny, I got to tell you, I'm waiting for some kind of crazy reference from you, how you connect to one of these actors or actresses.
I knew you were going to say that. And it's
become kind of your thing. I just 6 degrees of wow. It's just what I've kind of come to. Not to put you on the spot, but I'm looking for something.
Here's my weird one that I made earlier today when I was explaining to my friend about the cast. Margot Martindale. I said, you know, she's always the person who like plays someone's mom. So you'd recognize her, but you maybe can't place her. I was like she was in that movie last year with Rose Byrne and Mark Wahlberg, where they adopt kids, where they're like foster parents. She's the mom in that. Like anyone else would think of her from that film. Just me.
That's pretty classic for you. I mean, I think we're just about ready to trademark your ability to make odd connections to people. It's pretty fantastic, and one of the things I love most about doing these Love It or Leave It's with you.
I'm here for it.
Sheila, hit me up about the cast. Tell me who's really standing out for you the most here.
Rose Byrne, I know from Bridesmaids. Like, that was like kind of my, that's where I kind of knew her from. I love the cast. I mean, anything that Kate Blanchett is in, I'm just here for. And just the way that she's playing this role, it's great and infuriating all at the same time. The standout for me, believe it or not, is Tracy Ullman. I've never seen her in a dramatic role before, and how she is playing the bombastic, cantankerous mother of the modern feminist movement, Betty Friedan, is she's just like stealing the show for me. And Crazy Eyes from Orange is the New Black playing Shirley Chisholm is just, she's just such a force every time she's on the screen. It's just doing a lot of good things for, you know, the interest in the show, I think.
Talk about worrying about being pigeonholed for playing such a distinctive character like Crazy Eyes and Orange is the New Black. Seeing Uzo play Shirley Chisholm is insane because she's so good at it. And you can see like a little bit of the Crazy Eyes and some of the inflection and just some of her delivery. But it's also nothing like that character in any way, shape or form. She's also playing a character that in a lot of ways has one of the most interesting stories in this show because she's not just either for the ERA or against the ERA. She has an opinion, obviously, and she has a role. But then she was also has this extra added role of being the first woman to run for president. And in it's one of the initial episodes. You know, every episode is named after someone or a group of people. So she was, the third episode was called Shirley. And that's where you really get to see her. And she's just fucking killing it. She's just running away with the show. I was so blown away. To Danny's point about holding your own, I think it was Danny that just said, holding your own against Cate Blanchett. I think people have to go catch up to Uzo here. I think she, for me anyway, is just eclipsing everyone almost. I mean, they're all great performances, but I think she is just running away with the show. I'm really, really impressed with her.
The only other thing I'll say is that, like, moving forward so far, there hasn't been a lot more of Shirley yet. So she has such a good powerhouse performance in her episode, but then it's like very little Shirley going forward. And I also wanted to call out Ari Grainer, who's playing Brenda, who works at Ms. Magazine with Gloria. She is friggin' amazing. She's another one who I've been a fan of for a really long time. And I'm not going to say anything about the plot, but in episode 5, she really gets her time to shine and she takes every opportunity to do so. I was very impressed last night when I was watching it.
And to your point about Shirley, I don't think she did have a lot of involvement historically after the election. I finished episode 3 today, and so I did go do a slight bit of research on her. So I think that's probably historically accurate that she isn't involved that much more in the series.
I don't know, but it's just a credit to this show that its cast is so deep. You may have this like top-tier actress who could probably lead their own show or be a lead in a movie, who's, you know, on the call sheet, like 12th or 13th. Yeah, that's insane. That's a stacked cast. It's almost worth the price of admission just to see them all acting together. Just because there's nothing forced here. It all feels right. It's obviously a credit to the writing and the directing. Davi Waller, as the showrunner, lead writer, creator of the show, obviously has a firm rein on the material and the writing, which we could talk about if you guys agree or disagree. But the acting here is selling the show, for me anyway. Quickly, because I love him so much, give me your guys' round opinions on John Slattery. He's playing Fred Schlafly, Phyllis Schlafly's husband, and, you know, has a cousin kind of role to his role in Mad Men. Maybe a more sober version of his role in Mad Men, but very stuck in the past.
I was going to say a similar thing, is that it does just sort of feel like a more even-keeled Roger Sterling. So, I mean, I think he's obviously doing great. He's John Slattery. He doesn't do bad work, but it's not out of his wheelhouse. So I'm not overly impressed with him. I'm as impressed with him as I always am.
Yeah, I was going to say that as far as the writing and things like that, I didn't look to see before I started watching the first episode who the writer was and sort of the production team. But I was getting a very kind of Mad Men kind of a vibe to it. And especially because his character very much reminded me of Mad Men. So then when I looked it up to see that it was, you know, Davi Waller was the writer. But then, like, just in thinking about his character, he's kind of an atypical man, I would say, for like 1971, it's like circa 1971, just because of the political machinations that his wife Phyllis is going through. You know, she, you know, skirts off to a conservative viewpoint talk show in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the first episode. I don't know a lot of men in 1971 who would be like, okay, sure, you want to go to DC for the day to do a conservative viewpoint talk show on SALT, on strategic arms limitation talks. So I don't know. I think he's kind of, in certain aspects, very stereotypical. And we can maybe talk about some of that that we see in the first episode. But I also think he's a very atypical kind of a character for, given the genre and given the time period that we're looking at.
Just because you mentioned it, I think it is important to mention that, you know, Davi Waller was a writer and a supervising producer, I believe, on Mad Men, or at least she was a supervising producer at some of her time there, and was on the show when they won their Emmy in 2011. She was on the writing staff when they won the WGA, the Writing Guild of America, you know, award for outstanding primetime drama in 2010 and 11. And I think there definitely is a Mad Men-esque vibe here. Like Mad Men fast-forwarded a few years. There is an aesthetic here that does seem to share in common with the Mad Men world. Also, because you mentioned Sheila, and I wanted to springboard it, how is the show doing insofar as selling the late 60s, early 70s to you? This is the second show, actually, Sheila and I have covered that's taken place in the 70s. We did Hunters, Amazon's Hunters, which takes place in the late 70s. Are you feeling transported? Because, you know, setting and wardrobe and all that stuff really plays a part in selling a show. Danny, how are you feeling about the aesthetic of the show? Is it taking you back to that time and place before you were born?
Not much before I was born. however, you know, one of the things...
We're all 29, Danny. I don't know what you're talking about.
Forever. One of the things I was thinking about at the beginning of the show, actually, when we were talking about this time period in general, this movement, this ERA movement, is it is actually a period of time that I am not well educated on. Definitely wasn't taught in my high school. I mean, I'm sure it was touched on briefly, but not something we spent any kind of time discussing. And honestly, this whole 60s, 70s decade, I am not super well versed on. There are a lot of things of American history that I know a lot about. I do not know a lot about this movement, nor life in the 60s and 70s. So in that respect, this is great for me because I'm just taking it in for what it is and trusting, as I mentioned earlier, that they have done their homework and that they're painting an accurate picture for me.
The show is, for the verifiable facts, is hewing well to the history, to the actual history. They may be dramatizing behind the scenes conversations, which is what they say, which they tell you they're doing at the top of the show. But it has gotten good reviews from everything I've read about hewing well and depicting a story in an even fair way. And like you, Danny, I've spent a lot of time after the couple episodes I've watched, or a few episodes I've watched, going and reading about it to see if it actually depicted what really happened. And so far, it does seem pretty faithful to the truth, which makes me like the show more. It's earning street cred with me that I can let my guard down and not be so suspicious of what I'm seeing. Kristen, how do you feel about the early 1970s, late 60s in America vibe that the show puts out?
I actually kind of hate the 70s. So I feel like they're doing a good job because I mostly think they all look terrible.
Now, is that because the big hair, the disgusting mustaches, and the garish clothing? Or is it because of the garish clothing? Is it the landscaping or is it the wardrobe?
It's a lot of it. It's mostly the wardrobe, some of the hair on the men. I have to be honest, my favorite clothes are Phyllis's clothes because I am much more of a like 50s, early 60s aesthetic with costuming and stuff. So I'm having a hard time because I really think she looks amazing, but she's terrible.
Well, you know, 20 years in the past is right on brand for Phyllis Schlafly. I mean, I think you just kind of nailed it. You know, she's 1972 and she's got that June Cleaver sexiness about her.
She's lots of like 3/4 sleeves or like all the way to the wrists and, you know, like a kind of a beehive hairdo and stuff. Yeah, she's very stuck in the past for sure.
Cleaning each pearl on her necklace individually the night before.
And just, you know, even like the opening credits and things like that, the song they play is a fifth of Beethoven, which has, you know, it's like kind of like a disco vibe to it. So it's like an updated.
I was going to bring that up. I was going to bring that up if no one else did, because I think we should start putting funk beats on all of our classical music because it's amazing.
Also, so, like this, that was a thing back then. So like, you know, they would like sample, like, you know, this first like sampling kind of like was born.
Yeah.
But like the fact that like it's Beethoven. You know, so to me, it's like it embodies Phyllis, like this souped up, you know, she looks the part, she looks very modern, but then you open your mouth and out comes, you know, da 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 da, you know,
100%,
this very old sounding, you know, throwback relic.
So I think they were going for a Wonder Woman feel.
Oh, Wonder Woman.
I think
okay.
The opening credits are supposed to make you think of Wonder Woman because I thought of it immediately. And it might be because I'm older than y'all. But both the style of the opening credits and the song, that's what it made me think of.
I love it. I mean, it's definitely takes the opening theme, the Fifth of Beethoven. Just it does evoke a very specific kind of period of time in America, I think. I like that. I have to watch it again with the Wonder Woman thing in mind. I didn't get that vibe, but I think I could see it in my head where you're going with that.
Yes, now that you're saying it, I am remembering the Wonder Woman show and the credits to it and things like that. Like much of the lettering and the graphics that they use in the opening credits is like kind of a throwback to that. So good call.
That's what I'm here for. Color commentary.
Let's talk about the thing I've intentionally kind of danced away from because just because I know this is not an easy topic. This is not like a fun, you know, CW sexy teen romp kind of show. This is dealing with serious issues that resonate in the real world then and now. But I think it's an important part of the show. Let's go around and talk about how the writing and the acting and the entire production. Are you feeling anything? Is this show evoking emotion from you? Because I think that's an important part of whether or not a show is worth watching. Sheila, without yelling at me or anyone else.
Why would I yell at you?
Because I've known you a long time, and I know you have feelings and opinions about this show. Talk to me about how this show is making you feel. Is it evoking good or bad feelings in you?
You know, I'm going to say the show is doing all the things it's intended to do. It is making you think. It is making you angry. It is making you remember that we don't live in an equal society. Like, I live in a house with men, so you should feel bad for them, because since I started watching this and started, you know, kind of hearkening back to some of the research and things like that, it's like, you know, why haven't we progressed further than we have? Why did this die as an amendment? You know, so it's doing all the things it's meant to do. It's making you feel the feels.
I hope to God they are putting the toilet seat down these days. That, I can't imagine.
They are in my house. They're very considerate.
Kristen, hit me up. How are you taking in Mrs. America?
Poorly. I'm really enjoying it. Every episode's great. I think the acting and the writing are so good. So it's hard to talk about why it's so difficult to watch, but I think it was mostly encapsulated for me, honestly, in episode one. And it was very early in episode one. There is a moment where Phyllis and all of her friends, including Jean Triplehorn and Sarah Paulson, are all sitting there in the salon together. And they're like, you know, I understand all the rest of them, but Gloria Steinem is so pretty. I can't believe she hasn't been able to land a husband. And I started crying.
My mouth fell open at that line because it seemed so real.
Yeah.
Even now, I've known people in my life that would say and think things like that. But to hear it, my mouth fell open.
It was the type of thing where I just, because it, exactly for that reason, because I was like, I know people in my life who are not married, but who are happily with a partner or never want to get married or anything like that. And just to have it reduced to, you have to have a man, you're so pretty, why haven't you been able to land a husband? And the fact that we haven't moved on from that, and the fact that that's the only thing she's bringing to the table of worth is that she's so pretty, that should be enough to land her a husband, while Gloria Steinem is like one of the smartest people like ever. And it was so frustrating. I just started crying because nothing has changed in 50 years.
This is so interesting to hear, because I think I'm the only female on this panel who is single.
Yeah, I'm married.
I've never been married. I've never had an interest in being married. And that scene did nothing for me. And listening to you talk about it, I get it, but I think I'm so desensitized to it that I didn't even feel it. And that's just so interesting to hear you say that, because you're absolutely right. But it's been my life. It's been 20 years of my life. And so I'm just like, meh, par for the course.
So let me ask you, you mean for 20 years of your life, people have said that to you? And so you're desensitized, or you just are not planning to get married, so it doesn't matter or bother you?
People have said that to me, yes, not in those exact words.
Okay.
And it's something that I've also heard in other respects, you know, on the news, in TV shows,
right,
in films, in books, blah, blah, blah. Yes. So it's always been that. I've been hearing people with that attitude for so long. But yes, people have said it to me. Of course, not in that term. I mean, of course, they tell me I'm beautiful and I could be married to anyone.
No, it's so curious, like hearing a different perspective, because I have also heard it on TV and stuff all the time. But the fact that it was just so specifically, that is the thing as a woman that you should aspire to. And it was like, I am very happily married. I love my husband. I've known him for over 10 years. You know, it's great. But at the same time, that was not my goal in life. And it was the goal in life of these women. And that's what's so depressing, is that you know there's still women out there who the only thing they want to do is be married. And I think that's fine. But when you're subjugating yourself in order to get that, that's where it gets really dangerous. And you can tell as the show goes on that these women have just buried parts of themselves in order to quote unquote land a man. And they don't understand that they've done it, because they've so internalized the patriarchy of it. And I think that's what's so crazy interesting.
But I want to interject here, and I only because this is depicting a real woman from the late 60s, early 70s, who aspired to be that thing. And so we're listening to it as a TV show, but it was a thing in real life. But think back to like Sex and the City. Wasn't Charlotte just a modern Phyllis Schlafly in a lot of ways? At least when the show began, that it was her aspiration. It was her greatest dream in life to be married and have kids and be a housewife to her husband. And this was a modern feminist show, Sex and the City.
Yeah, 100%.
But it also wasn't the only way she defined herself. And I think that's the difference.
It's all still so very interesting to me because I don't think a lot of that has changed. It just works in a different way now. And I think that those women, that is what they wanted. I don't know that they buried parts. I totally understand what you're saying, but I don't know that they buried parts of themselves. That was their goal. And that is what they wanted. Just like nowadays, there are plenty of women who want to, you know, I feel judged by a lot of people because I don't have children. So like, what's wrong with me that I don't have children? Right. And the people who are judging me on it, 90% of the time are jealous of my life, but they don't even know it. Like, because their goal was to have kids and now they have kids and they look at me and they're like, oh, your life's so fun. Anyway, I could go off on this for hours. And I don't think we need to do that. All in all, I'm finding this so enlightening and interesting to hear our different perspectives. And that's what we're here for.
Just to kind of circle back to that point and just kind of, you know, end it, I guess. There's also a moment in episode one where Phyllis Schlafly is brought into some SALT talks, the Strategic Arms Limitation talks with Barry Goldwater in the Senate. And she's reduced to taking notes. Like they ask her to take notes like a secretary because she's the only woman in the room. Yet she has some real street cred on the nuclear question and things like that. But then when she goes to the secretary to ask for the pad and paper to dutifully take the notes that she's reluctant to do, the secretary says, here you go, Miss Schlafly. And she corrects her. She goes, oh, I'm married. It's Mrs. Schlafly. So there is like, I feel like that indoctrination of like the patriarchy where she's just like, oh, but this is who I am. And I will not be made to be something less than I am. I've reached the pinnacle. I'm a married woman. And you will address me as such. And then when the secretary says, I'm so sorry, I don't know if she's saying I'm so sorry out of being actually sorry that she said it or like, I'm so sorry that that's your life.
Oh, I don't think it's the I'm so sorry that's your life, honestly. I also know that Phyllis stood up for herself at the end of that scene. And that's where I say, I think this is the life she's chosen. So I don't know that she's buried things about herself.
All of this actually is I think, important because I think we're maybe dancing around what, to me, as a male, and so an outsider in the conversation to an extent, finds more distressing. It's not necessarily the debate over the ERA about its pros and cons, and would it have been used to draft our young women to the front lines, or would it have given women equal protection under the law that they've been denied, even though they should be afforded it under the 14th Amendment, which is a common refrain against passing the ERA. These rights already exist, they're just not enforced. But I think that's less disturbing, and I want your opinion on this. One of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about this was the ERA implodes ultimately. It was never passed, spoilers. It remains technically, still debated and periodically brought up and revived because it did make it to the state ratification stage. But it was really intra-women fighting that destroyed it in a lot of ways. It was the moral majority and women represented by Phyllis Schlafly fighting against women on the feminism side that ultimately doomed this. Even Nixon signed on to the ERA. It was Phyllis leading a mobilization of conservative women that was the ultimate nail in this coffin versus the Betty Friedan, Friedans, and the Gloria Steinem and other side. As women who are all successful, who are all impressive women, married or not, families or not, all in your own right are confident, smart women. How does that make you feel knowing that this is eventually going to devolve into women fighting women? Does that depress you more than the actual ERA topic? Or is that just, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman, you believe in what you believe and you fight for what you fight?
You know, the women in fighting has been a thing in my life. One of my jobs, part of a work-life balance committee called Women's Concerns Committee. And, you know, we did different things throughout the year for the hospital that I worked in to bring information and services and women's recognition to our staff. you know, most of the times I would just throw my hands up half the time because I was just so frustrated by just the level of infighting that would happen within our ranks. And, you know, so it's just like a microcosm for just the larger, you know, conversation around women. So you see elements of that on both sides in the show, where there's lots of infighting and there's lots of, for want of a better term, a lot of catfighting. And it ultimately sidelines the conversation because it's like, well, you know, you just have competing interests and it just, you know, devolves the conversation into that.
I just finished episode 3, and I actually thought a lot about this in that episode when Phyllis Schlafly's group, Stop ERA, had their luncheon, and they kind of had some issues between the groups of women. It wasn't even that crazy or anything, but I just thought about, it made me think about the fact that we are our own worst enemies a lot of times, and getting so emotional and worked up about things and letting our own emotions get in the way of what our ultimate goal is, that I started thinking, again, like I said, that we're our own worst enemy. And it's no wonder that sometimes we are treated by our male peers as flying off the handle and getting too fired up and too emotional about things, because unfortunately that does happen. For me personally, it's something I'm constantly working on, to not take things personally, to not get emotional, to just see the problem for what it actually is and deal with it as an employee or whatever it is, instead of as a woman or a friend or a whatever it is. So again, I'm only through episode 3, but I have a feeling that this is going to be a theme throughout this whole series, because I know what women are like.
I think I'm basically in the same boat where you are. I haven't watched any further ahead than that, but just knowing the amount of history I know about this subject, I know it ended up being a very woman versus woman debate, and that unnerves me. Maybe it shouldn't under me. I don't know, because, you know, I guess the idea is, if it was two men, you know, disagreeing about the merits of something for it, no one would bat an eye. So is this just, we're heightening it because it's women? Is just everything get heightened because it's, you know, women? Like Danny just said, like, oh, you're being emotional. Well, you wouldn't say that to a guy if he had that position. You would just say it was this, you know, respectful discourse and disagreement. So I don't know if it's fair to feel uneasy about the women sniping at each other and taking each other down, either within each respective side's movement and across the lines. You know, there is a part of the feminist movement that were divided against each other about how to try and oppose the ERA, just like there were people on Phyllis's side who were divided about how to stop the ERA amendment coming to be. And then you have, obviously, you have your Gloria Steinems versus your Phyllis Schlafly's too. So there's women fighting each other on all sides. And that seems sad to me because I still see that today. I think we all see that still today in small microcosms like Sheila was talking about, and in the larger world of politics and just, you know, world issues at large. You still see so much of it today.
You know, like the conversation we were having before, like about like women, you know, sniping and infighting. It's like,
yeah,
women get called bossy, and we get, you know, where men are assertive or they're leaders. You know, there's right. all of that language and jargon and things like that that come out. And it's just like, it's so infuriating because you would never ever talk to a man the way that women get talked to. It's all still there.
Yeah.
And it's infuriating.
That was what I was saying. I feel like when a woman does it, I think it's still true today. I think it all becomes so heightened in the excuses made for that behavior and also the criticism of that behavior. Instead of it just being a person and their behavior, it all is heightened when it's a woman involved. Either you have to cut her a break. She struggles. Oh, no, she's doing the same shit that everyone else is doing.
Right.
She doesn't struggle any more or less. She's just,
although sometimes, and this is the point I was trying to make, sometimes women create that persona of themselves, which is what makes me angry.
And sometimes it's intentional. You're 100% right. And it drives me bananas because it's like, you know what? We're all juggling a lot of stuff. And just because you have, like, I have one child. So what you were saying before, Danny, about, you know, like, you get a lot of flack because you don't have any children.
Right.
I get flack for only having one child. Like, oh, well, you think things are hard for you? Yeah. Imagine having three. Imagine having four. I'm like, well, I'm not batshit crazy. I wouldn't have three or four children.
Exactly.
Like God only gives me what I can handle. And I have one child who has the bandwidth of three.
Yeah.
He's got so much energy and such, you know, he's my child. So he has like my personality just in a smaller body.
Right.
So God only gave me one because he knew that I would go bananas if I had more. But there is always that layering effect of, well, you think it's bad. Well, you know, walk a mile in my shoes, you know, like,
right.
you know, friends of mine who don't have kids now, they're just like, hey, I'm sure you are missing out on everything that I'm doing here. But I'm like, but no, your struggles are different, you know, just because I have to homeschool.
You. Exactly. Everybody's struggles are different.
You don't need to be a martyr in order to make people sympathetic to you.
Right.
You never know what someone's dealing with at the same time, you know.
Exactly.
My mantra is just be kind, because you just don't know what anyone is dealing with, you know. Oh my God, like even when like I was like my husband and I we were married for 11 years before my son was born. So you can imagine all of the conversation that people were having with us about not having a child. Like, you know, you guys are married, you have a good home, you have good jobs, you've traveled, like when's the child coming? And meanwhile, it's just like I go for fertility treatments because I can't conceive a child.
Yeah.
You don't know that because I don't put it out there. You know, right. Now that I have my beautiful child, I'll be like, yeah, sure, I had to go for fertility treatment. And people are like, you did? I'm like, yeah, it sucked. I was a hormonal wreck.
Right.
I think that goes perfectly to the point that Danny was making before, that those women, like the women in the show, are living intentional lives.
Yeah, everyone's like I did this intentionally to myself.
Right. Everyone's priorities are different. So I think as people, we always have to be really careful of looking at choices someone made and assuming it was forced upon them because it
doesn't
match. Or
that they made a mistake or something.
Right. Or just because it doesn't match what your decision would be. That it's the wrong decision. That's the wrong priorities.
Yeah.
You know, for as many people who would think, why would you ever want to be 40 and single? My God, you know, there are people who would be like, why would you ever want to be fucking married with kids at 40? You know, like
In quarantine, in moments I'm lonely, but in other moments I'm like, thank God there's no one else here.
Because, dude, I mean, if you would like to take over some Envision, some Journeys, reading and math, I would be so indebted. Gets a little hairy sometimes.
It's I'm just, sure because, it does.
Well, you know, like there's like we've been up and homeschooling since about day 3 or 4 once they went out of school. But the platform of learning, he's 6. There's no interactivity like between the teacher and them. Here I'm posting a lesson. Here's a YouTube video that you and this is not criticism against the school because I think that they're doing a fantastic job. But the onus for learning and teaching falls 100% on the parents.
Right.
And I have a full-time job that expects a full day out of me.
Yeah.
That's being nice enough to work to allow me to work from home. I mean, I work for the New York City Public Hospital System. So the fact that I'm working from home alone is a miracle.
Yeah.
Because they could have easily just said, right, you're going to Elmhurst Hospital where I used to work and be like, and you can go in the emergency room and, you know, register patients. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I have a compromised immune system.
Yep.
All right. So we're at my favorite part of the show, the time where we go around and we say whether we loved it or we'll leave it. Danny, I want to start with you. Tell me, love it or leave it, and give me a couple reasons why.
I love it. As I've touched on multiple times, I feel like throughout the last hour, I love the historical aspect of it. I love that I'm being entertained and educated at the same time. I think the cast is amazing. The writing is really well done. So I am sticking with it. I love it.
I mean, I'm hard pressed to disagree with that. Sheila, love it or leave it, and why?
I too am loving it. It is infuriating. The topic is infuriating just for all the reasons that we've talked about. But the acting is wonderful. The storyline, they're being true to the story. They're being true to the actual, you know, historical events. And the topic, even though it's taking place in 1971 through 1978, I guess, is really when the show is going to run through. The themes resonate today so acutely for me. You know, they're talking about abortion. They're talking about women's rights. They're talking about women in the military. One of my good friends is an aviator for the Navy, and she has been for over 15 years. There are gender-neutral bathrooms. All of the things that the ERA was fighting for, a lot of them have come to fruition, but we're still fighting the fight. So I feel that this is a very relevant story for 2020. So I love it.
All right, Kristen, tell us, did you love it or are you going to leave it?
No, I love it. But as I said earlier, it does hurt my feelings. So I have a slight caveat, but no, I really do love it. I think even if it were like not about real world stuff, the performances and the writing and just, you mean, it's honestly beautiful too. It's beautifully shot. I think all that would keep me in regardless, even if it weren't such a present issue.
I think the fact that it hurts your feelings so much is probably a actual compliment to the show.
Definitely. Yeah. It's so real. And in that way, it makes me love it even more almost. But mm-hmm. It does hurt my feelings, but I do love it. And I'm going to go all the way to the end.
Well, see, who knows? Maybe shows like this and we can get some actual change going 50 years later. So
50 more years.
That's it. We're here for the 22nd century, baby.
Perfect.
For my purposes, you know, again, I think I'm coming at this a little bit differently than you guys because of just the natural. I do feel like a little bit of an outsider watching the story unfold, but I am aware enough to appreciate how topical it remains today and empathetic to that idea. But for me, the show succeeds because no matter what your politics are, no matter what your feelings are, I think the acting, I think the writing, I think the aesthetic of how the show looks and feels, the production values, all really put you into this time and place, which again, not very far in our past, but also a time that we don't really know well. And I think there's something here for everyone. It's not really creating villains beyond the villains that we already create in our own mind. So if you are Team Schlafly, you're going to see the good in her argument and her side and why the feminists are wrong. If you are Team Gloria, you're going to see why Ms. Magazine and the feminine mystique and second wave feminism were on the right side of history here and pushing for a thing that should be law and why Schlafly and her followers were, you know, of the devil. But I don't think the show is doing that. I think the show is presenting a fairly historically accurate, well-balanced story, which is ripe with juicy narrative and great drama. I don't think it's sensationalizing it. So for me, I appreciate it as great TV telling an important story that everyone should know, again, no matter what your politics. Before we say goodbye, Sheila, I see you raising your hand, jumping up and down. Tell us your little tidbit here that you want to tell us.
I meant to say it earlier when we were talking about the bit where, you know, Gloria Steinem's so pretty, like, you know, why didn't she get married? She did get married. She was in her late 60s. She got married to Christian Bale's dad. So Mr. Batman himself, his dad and Gloria Steinem were married for a couple of years before his dad actually passed away. So she is Christian Bale's mother-in-law.
That is insane and not something.
That's the only time that she got married.
Can you imagine what the genes must feel like, you know, be like in the Bale family? What a catch to turn Gloria. So pretty as she is at her older age to finally get married.
She is 86 and she is still hot.
Yes, she is.
Danny, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you in the universe and follow you and interact with you?
My blog is atxgossip.com. I'm atxgossip on Instagram and atxgossipdanny on Twitter.
You put up great content. Everyone should give you a follow and follow along with the Impresario. Sheila, where can people find you on social media?
I do write for the blog popculturereview.com, which Mike knows well. I'm also on Twitter at ShieldsMagangsta, and you can find me there.
There is no R in there. You are full gangsta. There is no R.
I am gangsta.
Yes. Kristen, where can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are on Twitter at So I'm Watching and Instagram at So I'm Watching This Show. You can also follow along on our website, soimwatching.com, which links out to everything, including our Patreon, which we have actually suspended payments right now. So everything is up for everybody for free. We're doing a couple bonus episodes right now where we're releasing Penny Dreadful weekly, and we're about to start doing the new Snowpiercer weekly, which is super fun for us. And yeah, other than that, we just, you know, looking for people to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. And that's it.
And you can find me on Twitter at Pop Culture Review, on Instagram at Pop Culture Review, at Facebook at Pop Culture Review. You could follow me on Twitter at PCR Mike Caputo. And I beg you, I implore you, I urge you to go give Pod Clubhouse a follow on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Don't miss any of our posts. We're putting out great content, everyone here at the Clubhouse. And yeah. Please listen, rate, review, subscribe. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can go to podclubhouse.com. We love talking and interacting with you guys. So definitely give us a listen. And thank you guys so much for listening. Sheila, Danny, Kristen, ladies, thank you so much for coming and talking about Mrs. America with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Bye.
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 Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.